TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. Enjoy more of the things you love with TCL. These two guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and scorenorth.com.
Or how about try this one on for size? Judd and Chip Scoggin, Star Tribune sports columnist, my buddy who joins us every Thursday. Conduits of Trouble is the show. Chip Scoggins, I'm just going to start with this question.
Yes, sir.
What is your take on the current state of the local NBA team, which absolutely, positively in the fourth quarter last night, which would have been Wednesday against Memphis, fell apart and drew the ire, and you don't see this much, drew the absolute ire of Karl Anthony Towns. When you see this, what is your thought about a team that has long struggled? But my problem is this year, the losses in all ways, shapes, and form, for the most part, have been really hard to watch. They've been ugly.
You know what's funny, Judd, is so last night I watched the third quarter. And D'Lo is making shots, and Beasley's going off, and Towns is playing well, and you're thinking, okay, this is what we saw in game two, right? This is what you thought, you get Towns healthy, this will,
yep.
You know, there's actually something here. And I turned it off and went and did something else. And then checked back after the game. And I did tip of that with, because my son was next to me, you know, the biggest Ja Morant fan in the world.
No Ja, yeah.
He's like, yeah, they don't have Ja or Jaren Jackson or Winslow, so their three best players are out. And I was like, yeah, I know. You know, they're Memphis doesn't have.
Dad's a sports columnist, damn it. Of course he knows.
But that's right. But I was thinking, okay, at least this sort of looks like what we thought it might look like.
Mm-hmm.
And then I come back and see the final score, and I listen to the post game and check Twitter, and I'm not at the point where I say blow it up again, but this ain't working.
No.
I mean, this roster does not work, and I know they're trying to go small and jack up threes and all this, but Rubio looks older than me and you. He can't play, Judd.
What?
I mean, there's nothing there.
So he had COVID, okay?
Judd, but that was like a long time ago.
Well, but
right?
That's what I was going to ask you. What? So, because you're right. Like, Chip, he looks terrible.
He looks awful.
He looks like he's 40.
Yeah.
He looks cooked. I've seen players age and it happens, but this is like he's gone off a cliff overnight.
Yeah. I mean, he's played like, well, what, one game? Had one good game?
Maybe, yeah.
And he just, I mean, just everything about it, he just looks really old and slow. And God bless Ryan Saunders, but he has too much confidence in Rubio. I mean, you keep putting him out there and watching these leads dwindle. It sounds like he's stuck with Rubio in the fourth quarter when the lead was evaporating. So I mean, I understand having confidence in the guy, but when he's not playing well, I think you just have to go to a plan B. And
yes,
it's not working, Judd. And I asked Ryan on the eve of the season, like, what's it going to take for this team to be better? He said defensive integrity. And if you're seeing defensive integrity, let me know, because I just don't see any defensive integrity there.
And that's what Kat said. Kat said the same exact thing last night. Yeah, it's terrible. And here's my problem. There's blame to go around, but the more that you watch like a game like the meltdown in the final quarter last night, Chip, mm-hmm. The more that as good of a guy as Ryan is, it just seems like this is probably too much too soon.
Yeah.
And I think that eventually he's going to be a good coach. And I think if he had been on some, you know, coaching staffs to learn more, he'd probably be benefiting right now. But I just don't know if at this point in time in this place, if going to such a polar opposite from Tibbs was the right call. Like between Saunders and Tibbs, Chipper, there has to be somebody who could hold players accountable, be tough, but not be quite as tough as Tibbs was.
Well, and I will say this. When Gerson made that decision to hire Ryan or promote him,
mm-hmm.
I championed it because I felt like, boy, if you alienate Towns anymore and he pulls, you know, a, you know, the typical NBA, I'm out of here, and forces his way out,
yep.
then what? Then you're really starting over, mm-hmm. and it's the dark days. And so I felt like he had a good enough relationship with Towns, and they as much as I hate saying this, that you almost had to let the, you know, your superstar pick the coach, because you're trying to appease him and build around him. So I was okay with them hiring Ryan. But you do wonder, you know, I think the injuries, and the fact that Towns and Russell had not played a lot together, was it probably six games now, whatever, buys him a little bit of cover. But Judd, I mean, they lost to a Memphis team last night that was without their three best players. Mm-hmm. And there's just no, and the rotations probably caused it. You know, I mean, I would think, you know, and Kat said this was a player, you know, loss, and we didn't do defensive things, but that's coaching too. And so I don't pretend to know how much leeway Gerson's going to give him, but if you follow social media, it's starting to snowball a little bit, and you wonder if they'll hear that.
Now, the problem too, though, Chip, is to go back to the guy that you just brought up, excuse me, in Gerson, I mean, the place where I will fault him is this team has no four. Like, they just don't. They don't, and they're trying to get by there, and they can't. And that's not Ryan's fault. That's on Gerson. Mm-hmm. Culver looks, the more I watch him, to potentially have been a bust as, what, the sixth overall pick that the Wolves traded up for in that draft. So there's definitely now some personnel decisions that Rosas has made that are coming back mm-hmm. to bite them, and that look to be very sketchy at best.
Remember how excited we were for Culver's improvement?
Game two, Utah was shooting, shot well. Yeah. His confidence, Chip, is gone now. He has no confidence to even shoot now.
Judd, players do not improve that much in one year. It just doesn't happen. I'm sorry. You know, you might improve a little, but you don't go from being a bust to a really good player. Now, he might be over this season. He might, you know, pull himself out of this and be slightly better than what, you know, he was last year, but he's not going to be. You are what you are. I mean, he was not going to make that big a jump. And the Rubio thing looks like a disaster now. I mean, how much does Rubio make? Is it $17 million? Did I read that right?
I'll have to look. It's too. Yeah. He looks awful. I mean, there's no defending how he looks.
No, that's a disaster right now. I do like the Edwards pick, even though he's not shooting it well right now. I think he's going to be a good player. But, you know, D'Lo can score, but he doesn't play defense to save his life.
And he's not consistent.
No. When he gets rolling, he can carry it. But
yeah,
we saw last night he couldn't make a shot in the fourth. Neither could Towns. But yeah, he's inconsistent. So yeah, I mean, this is as much on the guy putting the roster together as it is the coach.
Mm-hmm.
I just wonder how patient they will be, if they'll say, okay, we're going to give Ryan his full season. But if this continues and you have Towns back and you still lose games like this, I mean, at some point you have to wonder, you know, where this is headed.
Your bench last night outscored 50-21, and the Grizzlies had 80 points in the paint.
80 in the paint, Jeff.
Yes.
That is unbelievable.
Yes, it is.
I mean,
and Kat was playing. You know, that's the other thing. Kat was playing in this game.
Somebody should look at that. It's got to be close to a record, right? 80 points in the paint?
Yeah.
I mean, that has to be close to a record. If it's not, and you're right about the four, and I don't know what to fix it. I mean, obviously, you'd have to make a trade to try to fix it, because
PJ Tucker, maybe, if you can extract him from Houston.
Yeah, but I mean, and I know he's tough defensively and can shoot it, but John, how tall is he? I mean, at some point you want some size in there, right? I mean, I know he's a hard-nosed player and he can defend this, you know, because he's so physical, despite being undersized, but I mean, he can't be more than 6'6", is he? 6'5"?
PJ Tucker is 6'5".
Yeah, and so
he's 6'5".
I guess it can work, you know, but
hey, Chip, today
it's better than what they have. It's better than what they have.
Oh, yeah. Today?
But how old is he? I mean, he wouldn't be more than just a rental guy, right? I mean, he's got some miles on his tires.
Yeah, let's see what his date of birth was. I've got his file called up right here. He's 35, yeah. He's older.
So, I mean, you're talking about 1 year. What are you going to trade for?
Yeah, you're right.
How many more years you can get out of PJ Tucker, and would he, you know, would he even want to be here? That's the thing. I mean, he may take a look at this and say, no way.
Saunders today, and this scares me to no end, mentioned Anthony Edwards playing the four.
Really?
Like, how's that going to work? He can't play defense. Close. And guarding those guys?
This whole small ball thing. I understand. It's funny because on that same thing before the season, when I asked Ryan about the defense, someone else asked him about spacing. And he's like, spacing in today's NBA is everything. You ask every coach, it's about spacing. And I know they want to get four guys out on perimeter, five guys on perimeter, just shoot threes and drive and kick. But you've got to be able to defend. You can't be giving up 80 points in the paint. I mean, it's a joke. So, it's probably Ryan just being desperate at this point. Like,
yes.
What are our options? I mean, you know, they're trying guards down there that, you know, that just doesn't work. So, I don't know. I mean, this roster is just, it just doesn't make sense to me. I don't know about you, but it just doesn't make sense at all.
No, to your point from before, when they started to struggle in, I think it was at the beginning of the fourth quarter last night,
yeah.
Players on the floor were Russell, Rubio, Naz Reid, Vanderbilt, and Culver. So you basically had one guy who is, you know, a good player, or he's supposed to be, as we talked about, Rubio's been terrible. Naz is a reserve player who plays a role, but he is a reserve. Vanderbilt works really hard, but really can't shoot.
He's just energy.
And Culver's lost.
Yeah, Culver.
And they got eaten up completely.
Yeah, how many liabilities do you have right there?
That's the problem, yeah. Culver, Naz, Rubio, and Jared plays hard, and I really like what he brings in his own way, but he can't.
Role.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. And he really can't shoot. And Culver can't shoot. And Rubio can't shoot. How about that?
They need to go back to Tibbs and play Towns and those guys every minute.
I know. I know. Well, you know what? On Cat. So Cat had, in the postgame Zoom last night, he had some very pointed, that I liked, comments about how they played, used the word that you brought up that Ryan used before the season, integrity chip.
Mm-hmm.
But I see this without being panicked. I see this as an important step, but it's step two. So Cat, you know, for what, his first 4 years or so, we basically said he's too passive, he's too nice, and he was. I agree with that. I said that. So then last night he comes out and is clearly upset and ticked off, which you like to see, as far as that probably means that he is taking more control of the locker room. But the problem is, the next step is screw it. Like, it's not going to work here.
Yeah,
and that to your point is, if they get there, they're in enormous trouble, because this is a league where if a guy decides screw it, you can't just sit him down and say, oh, come on, it's going to be fine. That is ordinarily the point of no return, where a guy does demand and ultimately, in this league at least, ordinarily gets a trade.
Yeah, well, it's so much easier in this league. I mean, you know, I guess we've seen it. You see it in other leagues. We saw it with Stephon Diggs. I mean, he got his way. But the NBA, it's like when the superstar says, I'm out of here, he's out of there. I mean, they can, you know. Anthony Davis had, what, 2 or 3 years left on his deal? He found a way to get to. So, yeah, I mean, and he may be a long way from that point. But I'm just sort of, how long have we been talking about, and these guys have, you know, had the tough talk about being better defensively, like, 9 years in a row now? I mean, it never changes. I mean, they talk themselves blue in the face about they got to be better defense, they got to do this, they got to do that, and it never changes. And so they change coaches, they change front offices, you know, they change personnel, and still they're just horrendous defensively. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know. But this roster, when you look at it, now I will say this. I think Towns has been better defensively.
Yes.
Like, a lot better, like, in just effort, as much as anything.
Agreed.
You know, in the limited time we see him, I mean, look at the blocks he's getting and just the attention he's paying on that end, which we didn't see. So that to me is probably the biggest plus.
Mm-hmm.
But it's got to carry over to the other guys too. I mean, you know, Russell and, you know, and just everybody else has to be a lot better. They have to come along with them. And unless that happens, it's, you know, this is what they are.
Carl is playing with one hand.
Yes.
And I can almost assure you, a year ago or 2 years back, he does not come back like this quickly. And so I think he is maturing. I think he is more devoted to improving his overall game. I think those mm-hmm. things are all true. But I'm just saying that if this does not work, if Russell and Towns and the infrastructure around them does not work, I don't think the next step is Towns going to Gerson or Ryan or Glenn Taylor and saying, let's bring in a new potential star to help me. I think the next step is hit the panic button because Carl is going to say, you know what? The Clippers sound really good to me or something like that. And that's the concern.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You don't want him to get disheartened.
Yeah. And he was last night.
And yeah. And, you know, obviously that's, you know, one bad loss, but if this season nosedives and then you just don't feel like it's going to improve, you know, next year. And the problem is, these players are all friends, and they hang out together and train together in the off season, and they get in each other's ear, and, hey, I want to play with you. Let's go play there, that type thing. And before you know it, the team is completely out of the loop. They have no control over the situation, and it's the players kind of engineer where they want to go and who they want to play with, and that's what you fear when you have a guy that's your cornerstone, that he gets disheartened and just doesn't see any way out with this organization, wants to go elsewhere.
Exactly.
So they have to, and it goes back to our original point. That's why I felt like you had to at least give Ryan Saunders the job to make Cat feel good about the way things were going. If they pull the plug on that, do you care how Cat feels? You know, at this point, if he doesn't support it, do you care? If you feel like,
I think you have to, don't you?
What are you saying? You say you have to care?
Yes. If you're the team and you're going to fire him, I think you have to care about what Cat thinks still. Like, everything's been geared towards Cat.
But if you feel like Ryan's not the guy, I mean,
yeah,
I don't know. It's a tricky one. I don't know. It's tricky, you know, but I don't think that they're there yet. I think they want to, and probably in fairness, I mean, and Ryan's obviously young and still learning this, but I think it is probably, you know, at least give him some time with Towns and Russell together and see, you know, if he can make something out. And if he can't, then you come to that determination, make a move in. But yeah, I don't know if you have to get Towns' blessing with every organization move you do, but I think he's probably at the forefront of your thoughts though, right?
You can't afford to bring in a coach he does not like. I'll say that.
That's true. But I mean, who's he going to know? I mean, how's he going to know if he doesn't like him? I mean, if you're hiring somebody new,
yeah, you know, that's true.
In some ways, whoever they hire is going to be an unknown to them, probably, it from the outside. And so it's a little bit of a leap of faith, no matter who it is, if you go outside. So, but it, you know, this league is so crazy though, that, you know, I mean, look at like what James Harden just absolutely just sabotaged the Houston Rockets, and he got his way, you know, he got what he wanted.
Yeah,
just left a smoldering mess. You know, it's unbelievable how players can just.
But he went to a team where one of the two current star players is now basically taking time off, and we don't know exactly why. In Kyrie, so
yeah,
who knows?
Yeah,
that could be a gong show too. Yeah. But yeah, I think you have to look. The problem with Cat is this: is the Wolves. You know, what bite at the apple is this one now? About bite 10? You know, you had Kevin Love, you had Garnett, you had... So my problem now is...
Jimmy Butler, yeah.
Exactly. So my problem now is, if you screw this one up, Chip, at some point in time, it's just, you know, it's damn near done. I mean, they're going to move to Seattle or Vegas or something. I mean...
Port it up and you relocate.
Seriously, it's just like... Because, I mean... Cat, say what you will about Cat. Cat is a star player. Like, he's a very good player.
He's very good, yeah.
And if you goof this one up and Cat's like, you know what, bleep it, I'm gone. What do you do? Like, are you back to maybe we can win the lottery again and get a top, you know, like what's the answer at that point? You've now blown through so many opportunities to have what you consider to be transformational players, or at least players that could get you to, if nothing else, the playoffs, you know? So
you,
it's frustrating.
Yeah, it would be, you know, number 487
yes.
building process, and you're starting over, and you know, it's just, that's why you just have to hope. And, you know, what everybody says, hope is not a plan, but you have to hope that Gerson and all the things that they're doing is going to work, which so far, early returns, it doesn't look good.
Your best guess from the Vikings, do you think that Gary Kubiak is going to come back or not? And if not, when do you think we're going to hear from Gary? It's like, Gary, come out from below that rock and tell us what the hell your plan is.
Well, yeah, did he go to Hawaii for a week to sit on it? I don't know.
I would have thought
that, I will say, the longer this goes, that if he doesn't come back, I'm more convinced it'll be a son, because, you know, coordinators are going to get promoted and snatched up by other teams that somebody might want. So the longer this goes, it makes it, if he comes back, you know, this week or next week and says, I'm retiring, I think he'll probably be Clint. But yeah, I mean, he said take a few days, and this is, you know, and maybe they already know internally, you know, who knows, but it's weird that it's gone this long.
Yeah. It just seems like I think he's probably gone. And my guess is Zim said, oh, no, take some time. But it just seems odd. Hey, George Payton finally left. We covered how many times did we cover him, you know, talking to teams, turning teams down, being a finalist. I think he was with San Fran before John Lynch got that job.
Yeah.
And the Rams, he finally left.
Yeah, I would bet four or five times he was interviewed while we were on the beat. And, you know, I think that'll be a big loss for them. I think he had a pretty – I know he's very well respected. Everybody in the organization liked him, and I think he, you know, is one of those guys behind the scenes that people probably know his face and know his name but don't know all the stuff that he did.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's going to leave a void. It'll be interesting to see if they let him take any of the personnel people with him.
Yes, it will.
Whether it's college scouting or what have you. If he tries to bring some of the people with him, and if they block that, I assume they can block it. I don't know how it works for front office. But yeah, you know, good for him. We both know him. I think he's a pretty smart guy, and I'm sure it's a tough day for Spielman. I know he's having a presser, I think, right now as we speak. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with that position, because it's, like I said, it's not a role we write about or talk about a lot, but I think it's, you know, he's someone who did a ton of work in terms of the personnel side.
Yeah, because he and Rob, I think, basically are Rick's two most important right-hand men. Hey, if you're the Vikings, what are you doing as far as putting priority now that they're going to sit down, and I'm sure they're in the process of doing this, going back through the 2020 season chip. What are you doing as far as priority positions and areas where you absolutely positively think that you have to either go out and spend or draft high to fill spots for 2021?
Well, for me, without a doubt, offense, defensive line. I think you need a guard. Offensive guard, and you need a defensive tackle. You think that Barmore kid for Alabama would look good in Zim's middle of his defensive line?
I think that would be exactly what they need.
Now, I looked at one mock draft, and maybe it, you know, has gone up more after he just dominated Ohio State in that game, but I think he was around 18 to 20 in a couple mock drafts, that Barmore kid.
Mm-hmm.
So I could see Zim probably falling in love with him. Pass rushing, big physical defensive tackle. But I think both, I think, you know, interior offensive line and interior defensive line are the two. If I was right now, if I did a pecking order,
yep.
One, figure out what's going on with Daniel Hunter, contract wise and health wise.
Yep.
You got to get that resolved. To me, that's the number one issue overriding everything this offseason.
Mm-hmm.
Is he healthy and how much money does he want?
And that's a key question.
And then to me, too, improve the both interior lines.
Yeah, and I think that Mike will definitely push Rick to get him a three tech to play besides Pierce at the nose, for sure. Sure. But I'm with you on this one. You absolutely positively can no longer ignore guard. Like, you can't.
No.
And you know, Dakota Dozier, God bless him, cannot be on opening day of 2021 your starting left guard. That just can't happen again.
Well, yeah, and then I would say probably three on that list is three or four. I mean, I think you need to – your veterans, you have to figure out who will take pay cuts and that type of thing and where you are that. That's you know, I think Anthony Harris is gone. Barr has to take a pay cut. Rudolph, I think, is gone. So I think those guys are next. But then your left tackle, I mean, can you get Riley Reiff back at a deal that he wants or is comfortable with and that you're comfortable with? Because
yeah.
If you bring him back, which I would, you know, then you can leave Cleveland at guard, I assume. But I think you have to me, your first rounder either has to be an offensive guard or a defensive tackle.
Yeah, I agree. My guess is that the coach is going to push Rick to probably take a defensive end or tackle.
Mm-hmm.
But if that's the case, then I tell Mike that we are going to clear cap space and we are going to go pursue a guard on the open market, and we will spend. Because you can't have this QB with the interior of the line that they have. There's too much push now, and it makes no sense. I mean, you start the year, in my opinion, setting up Kirk to fail on purpose by not having a more stout interior offensive line.
Yeah, and don't you think Cleveland will be better? I mean, second year, he'll go through a strength problem, have a whole offseason. I got to think he's going to be better and just more equipped there. Dozier, I think, is what he is. You got to replace that. I'm still not sold on Bradbury at all, particularly as a pass protection. I think he gets pushed around too much. But we may have talked about this last week. I can't remember, but don't you think because if the salary cap goes down, that there'll be a lot of veterans get cut just because of salary, and that there'll be more veterans available on probably pretty team friendly deals because if that cap does go down quite a bit, that there's just going to be some cap casualties, and I don't know how teams are going to get around it.
Right.
That you might be able to plug. Whether it's a veteran, I think they got to get a veteran cornerback. I don't think they can come back with just 2 second-year cornerbacks.
I hope they do. They didn't last year, which was incredible to me. I was shocked by that.
So I think get a veteran cornerback, and then I would draft, either offensive guard round one, defensive tackle round two, or vice versa. You know, defensive tackle, then offensive guard, and still try to bring in a veteran, too, that's more than Dakota Dozier or Brent Jones, bring in somebody.
Oh God. Yeah. Yeah. No. Don't go cheap again. No, don't go cheap again.
Somebody that gets cut. And that's not necessarily being cheap. I just think there's going to be good veterans that get cut because and we'll see what the salary cap does, but if it goes down $10 million, there's going to be players that teams feel like they've got no, they're in a bind. So they have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there'll be some halfway decent options out there available.
Hey, what's your current draft rankings for the quarterbacks that are probably going to go in the first round, Chip?
Well, Trevor obviously won.
Yep.
I really like Mac Jones as because his accuracy. He's not really athletic, but I don't know. I think in today's NFL, you need to have mobility. So I think I still go Fields too.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see enough of the BYU quarterback, but I think he's fairly mobile, right? I think he's pretty athletic.
I think he can move.
So I think maybe the next three in whatever order, I think him, Trey Lance, and Mac Jones are in there in that group, and it's probably just whatever, whatever teams feel like fits their scheme or whatever. But I think those five are definitely first-round picks, right? I think Mac Jones – now, he's going to get knocked because, look at the talent around him. He got the Heisman Trophy winner, the number five guy, Heisman Trophy running back, just all this talent. But I think that does him a disservice. I actually think he's good, and it's not fair to just say, anybody could have done it.
So five guys you think, Chip?
I do.
Okay.
I do. I think it's Lawrence Fields, Mac Jones, Trey Lance, and then
Zach Wilson.
Zach Wilson.
Yep.
I think those five are first rounders, don't you?
Mac Jones, I'm curious about. I like him a lot, but what you broached is true, and the lack of mobility would scare me a bit.
Yeah,
because I mean, this game is now so geared towards that.
Yeah.
If you're a drop back guy now, it's just not the same anymore.
Yeah, I mean, and that is the one concern I'd have. I mean, like, God, he completed 80% of his passes. His guys, you know, or whatever his number was. I close there. Accuracy is just pinpoint. I mean, he just really.
And I like him. Yep.
And I think he's tough, and you know, obviously that system, but the mobility. I mean, I just think now you have to be able to improvise and move. And so I think that would, you know, I think that's what's going to be a knock on him. I'm looking at the stats. Yeah, 77 completion percentage, which is crazy. So I still think Fields is probably number two.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, how many teams are going to be in the market for a first round quarterback? If you're the Vikings and one of them sitting there, what do you do, Judd?
Oh, I personally take one. They won't, but I would.
You have to, yeah. I mean,
assuming I like who's left, I should say, just to clarify.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah,
I take one. They won't.
Guy, right. You need to be in love with the guy.
Absolutely. And, but if I am, I snatch him up.
Yeah, but I mean, hang on, look at who would be this? Because I think. You know, obviously Trevor's going one. I think Fields probably still goes number two, right?
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if the Jets trade out, but I think that whoever ends up in that two slot does take Fields. Zach Wilson intrigues me a lot.
Here's what I'm looking at. This is CBS. I just called it up right here while we're sitting here. Number one, Trevor Lawrence. Number two, the Jets, Field. Number three, Houston Texans, Zach Wilson. I think it's going to go 1-2-3.
Interesting. Well, and if Deshaun gets traded.
Yeah, and they have Trey Lance
and
number eight, you know, so that's four in their top ten.
Trey Lance scares me. I can't have a kid play one game.
Judd, I would be lying if I sit here and said I've even seen him play.
Yeah.
I haven't. So.
But he didn't play. I mean, he played one game, and what scares me is that this is the type of kid who, after playing one game in 2020, Chip, could easily go to the combine and knock your socks off, right? And you're like, oh,
yeah,
I need game action. It scares me that he's basically going to go a year without game action.
That's the thing you have to, I mean, it's going to be risk reward. I mean, it could wind up being great. Or it could be a bust. You just don't know. And you need to say that for every quarterback, obviously, but yeah, I mean, and people are going to look at the competition too. And obviously, MSU's a great program, and you know, they're championship at that level, but having gone a whole year and just not a whole lot of tape on him, he would scare me. But I mean, it'll be interesting to see if the Texans trade Deshaun. It sounds like he wants out.
I think I think he's going to force them to, don't you?
Based on the way he's talking now, yes. The reports, yes. I mean,
they're dysfunctional. Like, they've been dysfunctional.
Well, Judd, when we were down there this year for that game, he just looked like they ruined him. You know? I mean, Bill O'Brien, you looked at it like, I even tweeted during the game, I was like, what has happened to Deshaun Watson? I mean, he looked awful.
Yep.
And I'm sure people were telling him that, you know, or that this organization's ruined you and you got to get out, so maybe he is going to force his way out. So, I mean, you know, this is one mock draft, but they think four quarterbacks in the top 10.
And if Deshaun was being shipped, Chip Scoggins, and I'm Rick Spielman, on that phone quicker than you can snap your fingers.
What would it take to get him? How many firsts?
Oh, probably a couple of firsts. Well, so to circle back to your point from before, which is to me, and fans do not want to talk about this, they don't want to entertain it, and they don't want to consider it. But your question is the spot on question, Danielle Hunter. How happy are you? And by the way, if you are going to demand to be the highest paid defensive player in this league, I can't do that. And so now, what about a couple of firsts and Hunter?
Ooh. That's all. I mean,
and then you've got to be able to trade, spin Cousins off as well to like San Francisco.
Yeah. And the thing about Hunter, what is the gap between him? I assume Bosa, right, is the highest paid?
Yes, you're correct.
What is the gap there? Is it significant?
Between the two of them?
Yeah.
No. Wait.
It's Sally.
Oh, yes. Chip, Danielle Hunter is the 18th highest paid pass rush end in the league.
He ain't playing on that next year.
No, and he shouldn't.
I mean, that's...
The 18th pass rushing end, Chip.
Yeah. I'm going to look at defense.
He's playing for peanuts.
Is he $12 million? Is that what...
Who's that?
Danielle.
I got it. Go to over the cap and pass rushing defensive ends. I've got it right here because they actually do a good job breaking it down.
Edge rushers.
Danielle Hunter is at 14.4 average per year. Bosa's at 27. Miles Garrett's at 25. That's quarterback money.
Wow.
They're paid like quarterbacks, and they should be. They're that good.
So if you're Danielle, he's going to want to, you're not going to pay him that money, 27, but he's going to want 20, right?
Oh, well if what they told, I'm sure it came from his camp. If what Hunter's camp told Ian Rappaport is correct, they said at that time he wants to be the highest paid defensive player in the league. So you've got a problem.
Yeah, I got a big problem.
You can't write that check right now.
No. Now, I will say maybe they have a little bit of leverage because he missed the whole year with a neck injury, but yikes. I mean, you're talking about doubling his salary, basically.
But the neck problem, if I'm his agent and him, the neck problem makes me want to get him paid.
Well, yeah.
Because, I'm not going to come back and have him get hurt again on 14-4 and be like, well, we took our chances and now your career's done. So this is the problem. Both sides probably have a good case for standing their ground.
Yeah, but, I mean, he's not playing as the 18th highest.
No. Agreed.
With the salary cap that's coming down?
Yep. Really? And you're paying Kirk and you're paying Dalvin and you're paying guys. Like, you're already, invested. Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's where I don't know how they're going to get around that one. And that's why I said that's got to be number one on your list, because doesn't that deal dictate everything else, how you construct your roster?
Yes.
I mean, because
agreed.
You have to figure out what you're going to have to pay him, and then everything else falls into place, right? Because, he's not going to play on his own deal he has right now. I mean, that's just not going to happen. So, so that'll determine, his bar back or how much of a pay cut does he take. I mean, Rudolph's, that might be, Judd, that might be where you have to say, you know what, as much as we really like Riley Reiff and he played well, can't afford him. We've got to have a guy who's on his rookie deal playing left tackle.
Right, but then it's like you're right back to, if you move Cleveland to left tackle, now you've got to go get a right guard too. Yeah, I don't know. I think that you are exactly right when you said you have to go to Hunter and his camp and assess things ASAP.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this can't this should not drag on. If he says, you know what, I want a dollar more than Bosa, you've got a serious decision to make immediately, I think.
Yeah, and it can't be one of those. It can't be like Dalvin where you take it right up to the eve of the season opener. It's like, yeah, we'll squeeze it in and we'll figure it out later. This one feels like you have to figure out first and then construct your roster, because if he really wants to be in that up with those guys, you're talking about a gigantic pay increase for him, which is going to affect everything else. So, yeah, Spielman's got his, and Brzezinski got their work cut out for him here. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how this shakes out.
Exactly. Last thing, what can we do to help your sport? And I saw that you did a column for the Star Tribune about this the day after the national championship game. The regular season, to me, is still fine. Like, the games are fun, and a Saturday of watching college football is great. So that's not my complaint. But what can we do to create a system where it's not basically the Yankees, Red Sox, and Dodgers year after year? These playoffs, Chip, just aren't fun.
Yeah, well, there's two issues here that they're kind of connected, but they're sort of not. So I want them to expand to 8 teams, the playoff, just because I sort of resisted it because, to me, the college football regular season is the best thing going, right? When there's only so few spots, and if you have only four spots, and you know every game feels like a playoff sort. And I always worried that if you expand the playoff, you'll remove some of that. But I think if you got to 8, it wouldn't. And I think teams are just, or the average fan, even me, if it's just Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, and Oklahoma, and Notre Dame every year, it's like, it loses its luster, you know? So they need to freshen it up. And my idea was, and people have said this model's out there, is, you know, the 5 Power 5 schools get an automatic bid. The best group of 5 team, which would be Cincinnati this year, which, you know, that'd be fun. And then 2 at-large. So if you want to put Coastal Carolina in there, if you wanted to put, you know, Texas A&M this year. So I think if you did that, you would make the playoff more attractive and more fun.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to see it go 16. I think that might be a little bit of a pipe dream, just getting it to 8. Would be
right.
A big step.
Right.
But if you do that, that is not going to solve Alabama and Clemson winning every year. It's just not. The only way I think that you could take a step forward to, and this is the second issue, it's kind of been a little bit of, I don't know if groundswell, but there's been more talk and buzz about it, is lowering the scholarship numbers. So right now.
This intrigues me. I like that.
Yeah, so right now Division I teams get 85 scholarships. So if you lower that number to 75 or 70, so that's, you know, 15 kids that would have, let's say it's 70. So that's 15 kids that would have gone to Alabama, 15 to Clemson, 15 to Ohio State,
yep.
You know, 15 to Oklahoma. They would have to go somewhere else.
Right. I like
so
this.
You water, you know, it trickles down. So, you know, that better town is more evenly dispersed. But who runs college football? Let's be honest. The big boys, right?
Yep.
Nick Saban, Dabo Sweeney.
Absolutely.
Ohio State, they run college football. Do you think they're going to go for that?
No, but...
No chance. And here's the other thing.
No.
Here's the other thing.
Yep.
But here's the other thing. Go to PJ Fleck. Go to the Wake Forest coach. Go to the Oklahoma State coach. Go to the Kentucky coach and say, hey, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take you guys from 85 to 75 scholarships. You think they're going to go for it? No chance.
But it would help this. But it would help the sport.
It would help them.
You're right.
It would help them. But I can guarantee you, if you go to those coaches and say we're taking 15 scholarships from you, they're going to resist like you wouldn't believe. I guarantee it. Even though it would help them, but I just don't think that they would go for it.
But we need to make. But I mean, that playoff needs to be more exciting. And I'm not saying that the good teams can't be consistently good. That's fine. But when it's this predictable, right? I mean, that's the problem. Is it's just and so the one thing that I will say about your point about Dabo and you know Nick coming back at you and saying no, I won't allow this, is the people that really potentially could run the sport are television, and mm-hmm. I gotta think that they saw that, you know, ratings declined for the game on Monday. I got to think that there is a point in time where they push to get, if not more parity, something that at least looks like more parity.
Yeah, and I agree, because people are just going to stop watching. And I talked to Craig Thompson, who's the Mountain West commissioner, good guy, former Gopher grad.
Right.
And he was like, and that was his whole point, is like, you know, it's just interest. If people stop being interested in it because it's the same old thing, then your sport's going to be hurt. And I think it's fair to say college football is the second most popular sport in this country, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you think about all the fan base, you know. And so if you're they don't want to jeopardize that. And so, you know, the scholarship reductions, I think, would help. But it comes back to the system. In pro sports, the worst teams get the best picks, but when you're drafting or when you're recruiting instead of drafting, it's just, how do you overcome that?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Alabama, every year, for the next 5 years, I can tell you who the top five recruiting is going to be. It's going to be Alabama, Georgia,
Ohio State,
and Clemson. It just is. And so, you know, it's not like you can say, all right, you know, the worst teams are going to get the best players. I mean, you know, that works in pros, but if I don't know how you get around that part of it, you know, and that's what it's led to, you know. So
it's just sad because I watched a good portion of that game on Monday night, and then I was just like, you know what, I'm done.
Well, yeah, Judd, I mean, I was watching it because I had to update my column, and I got to be honest with you, at halftime, I was just like, man, this is over. This isn't even exciting. Yeah. I mean, it just, you knew what was going to happen. Alabama was so superior to Ohio State, and it was just like, when it becomes boring, that's not what college football is. You know, college football is just a pageantry and excitement, and right now, it's just kind of boring because you know what's going to happen. Here's the thing. I would be willing to bet that Alabama's going to play Clemson in the national title next year, and I bet it's, you know, a pretty safe bet right now. When you can say that with reasonable confidence, and everybody like, yeah, you're right, then it's not a good spot.
Exactly. Thanks, Chipper. We'll talk to you next week. Okay.
All right, brother.